select where age is greater than 5, you can actually search through the database based on different attributes. Well, spatial databases, they allow you to ask questions based on different criteria. So you could say, for example, find me a list of the countries where the area is greater than 1 million square meters, or find a list of countries or a list of rivers, for example, where the length is greater than 1,000 kilometers in the world. So it basically enables you to actually make your spatial queries, but actually write them in a form that you're very familiar with using SQL with some new operators chucked in the mix. Now, that may sound a little bit cryptic, but I hope by the end of this you will actually have a rough understanding of what I'm trying to do. And I've also got some examples as well, which I think you'll quite like. Okay, so how can we use PostGIS? Well, there are actually two main ways that you could actually think about using this. The first one is probably one of the most common uses, and that's being used as a GIS object store. So if you think about it, if you have your Arc server set up somewhere that you've been playing with, and you want to actually have a central repository of geometries, then you can use PostGIS and Postgres as that central repository. So that means you can have your clients around the network, and they can look at these features, and they can display them on a client somewhere. So whether you're rendering maps or you've got a proper GIS client, you can actually point your client towards your Postgres and PostGIS server, and you can start playing with the geometries. Now, the most common things that people like to put in this are Esri shapefiles, which if you've played with GIS software, you should be vaguely familiar with. Those of you who don't know what Esri shapefiles are, they're probably, I describe them as the CSV of the GIS world. So they're the bog standard common format that you might actually want to use for transferring sets of coordinates. So for example, you can have polygons, you can have lines, you can have points. So it's basically a very basic and probably about 10, 15 years old format which we hold this information in. So it's just almost like a very basic format for holding that information. So that's one way which we can use PostGIS. We can actually use it as a data store and allow all our clients across the network to connect to this data store and manipulate that information. Now, the second way in which we can use PostGIS is we can actually start doing some processing with it. And this is where things start getting very interesting. There are a whole list of what we call binary predicates. And these are just functions that take two values and they return either true or false about your geometry. So you can say, do they cross? Yes. Do they touch? No. Do they overlap each other? Yes, they may well do. So these are actually predicates that work on these two geometries. And it doesn't matter how complicated your geometries are, it will actually calculate the exact match. So for example, if you've got two country outlines that are very close to each other, and you want to make sure if they touch, then it will actually mathematically for certain, within floating point tolerances, it will tell you that those are actually touching, and it will give you the result of that touch as a single point. So these things are highly accurate, because some of the spatial functions you may see, if you play with MySQL, they tend to only work on the bounding box, whereas this will actually work on the full topological geometry. So the PostGIS functions will actually delve into the geometry, and they will create exact results, which is something that is really handy when you're going into processing. So we've got these binary predicates. And the other thing we can do is we also have, I describe them as almost processing functions, spatial functions, something like that. But we can have functions that also return geometries. So if you think, for example, if you've got two geometries and they overlap, for example, like that, then you can return the part that overlaps as its own geometry. And if you've played with standard GI systems, and this should be vaguely familiar, it's nothing new to PostGIS. But it's just the sort of thing we can do. And we can also do union, which is where you take lots of individual parts. For example, if you imagine if you've got a big jigsaw and you've taken a few pieces out, well, the union is the resulting part of the jigsaw which is complete, minus the hole for the bits you haven't put in yet, if that makes sense. So that describes a union. You've combined all the different pieces, all the separate geometries, into one big outline, effectively. And that's the result of a union. Okay, so that's the magic. How do we actually do this magic? Well, I'd be lying if I said that PostGIS did it all, because it doesn't. It actually makes use of two well-known in the open source geospatial community libraries. One of these is called Prog4, and it's a reprojection support library. So for example, if you imagine that if you've got a list of cities or towns or something like that, well, you can have them in different coordinate systems. You may have some stuff in latitude and longitude data. That's one different type of spatial system. You may have them in OSGV grid. So if someone gives you an OS map reference, that could be another set of coordinates that you have. So by linking with the proj library, it actually gives us the facility to actually decode and translate between different coordinate systems. So we can actually do on-the-fly translations from OSGB and OSGrid coordinates straight into latitude and longitude. So it basically spatially enables the coordinate transformations so we can actually map between two different sets of data depending on the source. That's the first library. And the second library we have is called GEOS. And GEOS is what we use for all the geometric operators. And this is how we calculate things like touches, intersects, crosses, overlaps, convex hull, all the really sort of topological GIS-y type operations that you might actually want to use when you're looking at actually processing data with Postgres and PostGIS. So we make use of these libraries, but the important thing to stress is that all this functionality is available through SQL. So these funny operations of union and intersection, we can actually generate these by coming up with some SQL statements, which I will show you a little bit later. Okay, so you're probably interested in how do I actually install this. Well, if you're based on a Linux system, we have a lot of people that tend to work with Red Hat Enterprise. And the guy who looks after the Red Hat Archive dev room has done a very good job of packaging up all the PostJS packages as RPMs. So if you're using something like Fedora Red Hat Enterprise, if you point yourself towards that YUM repository, then you should find pretty much everything you'll need to go and get started with this. So if you've watched this talk, you think, hey, this looks really exciting and fun, well, this is where you go to actually go about installing these libraries. So that takes care of the binary libraries. And the other thing we need to do as well is, because we're using custom Postgres data types, then I'm sure this has probably been covered at some point in other talks today, but we actually need to come up with some SQL function wrappers so we can call these libraries, our C functions, from our SQL statements. And that's where we get these two files from. We have the lwpostgis.sql, which contains all the main stuff, and then we have a separate file called spatialrefsys.sql, and that contains all the coordinate transformation information. So that's what we use when we're translating between latitude, longitude, and OSGrid. So those are the only two files you need to load into the database. So creating a spatial database, it's pretty easy. So you've installed your RPMs, and all you need to do is, first of all, you create yourself a blank database, really standard Postgres stuff. So you do create database. And then the other thing we need to do is we need to load in PLPGSQL, because PostGIS requires that stored procedure language to provide some mixed functionality. But again, this should be reasonably familiar with most people, I think. So we create our database, we create our PLPGSQL language, and then we just load in, using standard PSQL syntax, we just load in our spatial types, and then we load in our spatial reference systems table, which has got all our different coordinate systems in. So, and then once we've actually loaded those files in, then that's it. You've got a spatially enabled database. So we can start having a look at some of the spatial functions. So what we do is, once you've actually created your database and done that, we can just do a select full version, and you can see, yeah, it's actually picked up and running PostJS. And you can see it also mentions the versions of the reprojection and GS libraries. So it's not there really other than to show you, if you take a copy of these slides somewhere, that if you can do that, then you're ready to go, and you can start playing with some geometric data. So how do we actually get geometries into PostJS? Well, the way we do this is PostJS follows a standard set by the Open Geospatial Consortium, and the full length is the OpenGIS Simple Features Implementation Specification for SQL, which is a bit of a mouthful, but we normally call it the SFS, the Simple Feature Specification. And you can actually go and you can download this spec from the Open Geospatial Consortium's website. So if you feel like having a look at how perhaps some of the internals might work or how other people might implement this, then this is where you really want to go to read about how the spatial side will interact with your database. And just as a note on there as well, PostJS has been officially certified as SFS 1.1 compliant, which means it has been officially certified by the Open Geospatial Consortium. Now, there are other vendors who are actually implementing versions of the simple feature specification. For example, if you are looking at betas of the Microsoft SQL Server 2008, then they do actually have a sort of cut-down version of the simple feature specification. They're actually beginning to build some of this stuff into their databases too. So it's just to emphasize that this is not something that we've come up with. This is actually a standard. So once your geometries are in that format, you've pretty much got the flexibility to do with them what you need to do. So, we've got our geometry types. Well, what can we actually put into our tables? Well, standard GIS objects, really. The main ones you probably want are points, polygons, and line strings, which are fairly self-explanatory, where line string is, I mean, I would have probably called that a polyline, but it's a line string. So it's just a list of coordinates that you can use to form a line. It's that simple. And we also have as well, we have some array types as well. So for example, if you're returning, say perhaps where two polygons cross, you may get more than one point where that happens. So we need to have some array types as well. So they're not really too important at the moment. I just want you to be aware that they're actually there. But these are the most interesting ones. These are our basic open geospatial types here, the point, the polygon, and the line string. And when we start to do some processing, you'll start to see some of the array types coming as well. OK, so this is actually just a transcript of a session to show you how you'd actually go about putting some very simple geometries into your spatial database once you've got it. So the key is actually this function here, which is the stgeom from text, geometry from text. Again, this is a standard function. And then the geometries are in what we call well-known text format, which again you can find in this Open Geospatial Consortium specification. So you can see here that each coordinate is, you have your X, Y, or possibly Z if you're working more than one dimension. You have a set of space-separated pairs there, so that's your X and Y. And then if you have multiple sets, then each set of coordinates is separated by a common. So it should seem relatively intuitive to you if you're looking at arrays of numbers. So this just shows you an example of a point. So the input is actually a string. So you can see we put in point as a string. And you see we also have here the coordinates. We have 4 and 51. And all the select does is literally just we input it in, and then we just select it right back. So we're just putting the geometry in and saying to PostGIS and Postgres, hey, we put a geometry in. So that doesn't do anything too exciting. We also have for a line string here, again, you can see that within the brackets, we have a comma separated set of coordinates. So this is, for example, if you were tracking, a favorite pastime with most people is to actually put in their GPS tracks. If you've got a handheld GPS track, and you go sailing or mountaineering or rock climbing or something exciting like that. And a lot of people tend to create line strings from their GPS tracks and then actually insert those into the database. And then once they've done that, they can then do things, for example, like calculate how far they've actually traveled based on counting up the length of those coordinates. So that's just a basic example of a line string. So again, I'm just putting one in and I'm selecting it straight out. So nothing too exciting there. And also, bottom here, we have a polygon. Now, the only interesting thing to know about this is that polygons can have rings. If you take an example, if you imagine a donut, you've got an outer ring, which defines the outside, and then you have an inner ring, which defines the hole in the middle. And in the simple features specification, these you basically specify each set of ring coordinates with its own set of brackets. So what this means is, if you've just got a simple filled polygon, then I have a polygon here, which is defined in the standard polygon open bracket and close bracket syntax. But then within that, within another set of brackets, I have each ring. So that ring there just would contain the outside, and if I had a hole in the middle, then I'd have a separate set of brackets, which would define the set of coordinates for the hole. So that's the principle of rings inside polygons. So that's fairly acceptable, I think. And also, just at the bottom, just to show you that we do actually do some type checking. People have asked what happens if we try and put in invalid geometries. Well, yes, you get errors back. So if you try and make a polygon where the first point doesn't make the last point, then you'll get an error. It will come back and tell you. And another thing that people like to do is they like to transpose their spaces and commas as well. Some people like to put the commas between the pairs rather than spaces, and that doesn't work. So again, PostGIS will actually throw up an error and say, sorry, this isn't going to work for you. Okay, so now to give you an example of some of the more complex things we can do with Postgres and PostGIS. The data I actually got is a really good book out by, I think it's Earl Shiler, I think, called mappinghacks.com. And he's got this really nice website on the internet. And from there, he offers some free data sets that you can use. They're all from public domain sources. So they're pretty much free to go. If you want to download them and start loading into PostGIS and having a play, then you're more than welcome to do that. That's not a problem. And they're actually supplied as these Esri shapefiles, which I said is like the CSV of the GIS world. So there are actually two sets of data I've put into this test database, where I'll show you in a second. Firstly, we have world borders, where we have the country outlines of most countries. And that's just a set of very large set of polygons, where you have one polygon per row in the table, and each polygon represents a country. So that's a standard how you might arrange your spatial database of countries. And then also, I have cities as well. And the cities data set is just a table where each row represents a city in the country. So in this case, the data set, the points are actually longitude and latitude, rather than any other particular data set. So that just shows you, and again, you have one row per city. Very simple, standard database stuff. So what would happen if I start doing spatial queries on these data sets? Well, this is the example of a type of query that you would actually do. Now, the query I have here is, given a table of countries, find the names of all the countries that border Chad. So assuming I've got an outline for Chad in my World Borders data set, we can see this is the type of query I'd do. So what I'm doing is, first of all, I want the names of all the countries, so I'm returning those. And then I'm actually doing a self-join between my two tables, because I want to find all the countries that touch each other, and all the countries are in one table. So that's why I'm doing a self-join. I'm actually joining back onto the same table in order to find the neighbouring countries, which I'm going to return. So that's why I'm doing that crossword. And then I'm saying, right, I want to find... And this is one of these binary predicates that we use with geos, where we have touches, or ST touches. And what touches does is it literally says, no matter, given the maximum precision of our floating point coordinates, if these countries actually touch, if they have common borders and touch, then we actually want to return those countries. So we're taking our table, we're cross-joining in touch, we're saying where they touch, and we want to do this to the country of Chad. Okay? So we run this as a database, and bam, we get a list of six rows. So, yeah, that will actually give you a spatial query. So you've actually done a spatial query now, saying, I want to see all the countries that touch Chad, rather than searching based on a name, a country name, an attribute, a population, or an area. So does that make sense to people? Is that sort of how we integrate it with SQL? Okay. So that's my first example. So I hope that gives you a rough idea as to how you can go about doing this. But it's fairly self-explanatory as well, which is quite nice. Right. I also have a second example here, which is based on the same set of data sets. Well, I have my world borders and my cities. Now, what I'd like to do is I'd like to total up the number of cities that lie within each country and return that list sorted alphabetically. Okay? So what we're doing is, here is where, if you think about if you were doing this sort of tallying and aggregation in normal SQL, you'd be using something like a group by. And in PostJS, this is actually no different whatsoever. We're actually using a group by query. So you'll see, I'm selecting the country name, and I'm selecting the counts as well. And then I'm doing that from cities and world borders. And now, this is another one of these spatial queries, or spatial operators, we can put inside the where clause. So if you remember before, I had actually whether these countries touch. Well, this one here, I'm actually saying within. So I want to return the cities that lie within each country, then I want to group them by country name, and then order them by country name to give me the sorted list. So you can see here the example of the output that I am actually getting out of the database. So you can see my country name and my count there. So that should look relatively straightforward if you've played with group bys and aggregates. And again, it's just the nice spatial touches where we've got this join here between our world borders and our tables, but we're actually doing a within check. And again, that's exactly within. It's not just bounding box. Okay, here's just a list of things that we can actually use to talk to PostGIS. There's quite a lot of source work in the open source community. So for example, Jump, QGIS, GeoServer, MapServer, those sorts of programs can all talk to PostGIS, so they can pull objects out of a data store. Some can even do some processing, which is good. But because this is a standard, there is actually some proprietary support for this as well. So the main ones that I know off the top of my head are CADCore SIS, Safe Software's FME, and there are rumors that newer versions of the ARC tools, when they come out, will actually support this as well. Now, we are not sure exactly as to the level of support we will have when these come out, so that will be an interesting one for us to wait and see. But that just gives you an idea of the wealth of tools that we can actually use to come up with these queries. Right, again, even if you're not necessarily using a GIS tool, the examples I saw there, they're just standard SQL. So you can run through those without a problem. You can type them in, and you can get the geometries backed as space-separated coordinate pairs. So even if you're not necessarily using a GIS tool, you can actually come up with your own parsers. You can actually parse the results back from the database yourself. So say if you're doing a calculation, you're returning a single polygon, then you can actually parse the coordinates of those polygons and then do whatever you like. So you don't necessarily have to have a GIS tool and able to get at your data, because we can return this as standard text format. So what you can do is you can actually use this to get the information out using just something simple as a really simple PHP script or a JavaScript. And some languages, actually, people have written wrapper classes around these. So they will actually pick up the spatial types automatically. And then we can then map these into native objects type. For example, there are object mappings available for Java, so that if you do a select star or a select on a geometry column, it will actually create you a geometry Java object for you, which you can then access via standard methods and properties. So there are actually wrappers available that will do this conversion for you. But if you don't have that, then you can still actually connect to and get to your data. Okay, so that's it just for the basics for the slides. But what I wanted to do was, I just wanted to spend a couple of minutes just giving you a quick visualization exercise on some of these queries. So, unfortunately, it'll take me a couple of seconds to set up, because this isn't actually my laptop. I had to borrow this for this query. But I just think as soon as you see it in action, I think you'll get a much better feel for what it is we're actually doing here with this database. So, before if I push on the demo, has anyone got any quick questions that they'd like answered? Yeah? At the moment, there are two sets of functions. There are spherical geometries, and there are sort of planar Cartesian ones. Now, the majority of PostGIS is actually Cartesian planar. There are a couple of functions. One of them is a distance function, which you can wrap around spheroid, but we know that support for those type of functions, there's not a great deal in there. So as people have required things, then they sponsor people to write them and do examples like that. So. That's not one I've actually used. That's, I think... Was that an Oleg and Theodore project, was it? I think that was astronomy, wasn't it, they were using?
Yeah, it's basically a spherical set of data types and functions similar.
Okay. Yep. Yeah, you can if you want. There is actually a KML output function. So in the same way that we were selecting text versions of geometries, you can actually select KML versions of geometries or GML versions of geometries as well. So if you're wanting to do that, then that's something you can do. Yeah.
Are these searches indexed?
Yes, they are. It's a bit difficult because I assume that you guys know about indexes and building databases, so you'll have a rough knowledge of that anyway. And I wanted to actually spend a bit more time on the visualization than that, but you'll get a rough idea of the speed. I mean, personally, I've seen data sets which have got about 80, 90 million records in spatial database, and they return very quickly, as you would expect with a standard Postgres query. If everything's indexed correctly, then it works very well.
My suggestion is at this point that we throw the kind of timetable out the window and watch Mark's demo.
Yeah, okay. And I think that once you've seen this, you'll actually get a feel for how the whole thing slots together. And say, if rough show of hands, who's used the GIS system before, like ArcView or ArcServer? So, right, okay, yes, there's quite a few people that are familiar with the geospatial side. Okay, in that case, you should find that a lot of this will look exceptionally familiar. So, what I'm going to do is, I've actually installed on here a copy of QGIS. So, I'm just going to launch that here. Oh, right, okay, yeah, sorry. As Alex confirmed as well, that was in my list of open source software as well. So this is something that if you want to play with it, you literally can just download it off the web. You can download these data sets off the web and you can play, which is one of the great things about this stuff. So, as in all good things, here's one I made earlier. So here's my demo project. So this is just, as you can see, like a blank GIS viewer. Now, I mentioned before that I got these three data sets. I had one which is world borders and one which is set of cities. So what I'm going to do is I'm now going to go to Layer, and would you know it, that QGIS has got built-in PostGIS support. So straight off the bat, we can actually just go to add a PostGIS level. Now, you'll see here, I've got a Postgres connection, and this is actually just a standard Postgres connection string, if you look at it. It's got database, it's got username, password, it has port numbers. It is almost like a standard database connection. And if I do a test connect, okay, that means we're good to go. So what I'm going to do is I'm actually going to connect to my database here, which is PostGIS. And you'll see that in that database, it's immediately scanned through the database and it can see the geometry columns that I have in my database. So you can see I've got one set of points called cities and one set of polygons called world borders. So what I'll do is I'm going to add in the world borders to start with. So if I add that in there, I just click add. And there we are. And there's my set of world borders as a set of coordinates. Now all they're quite big polygons, but they're all set and they're all indexed. So if I start zooming in around here, you'll see I can start zooming in around the UK, and you'll see that's nice and quick, given the large amount of geometries, and I can pan through, and I can do various sort of GSE type things. I can zoom back out to the overall layer, which is that one. I can actually do queries as well. So for example, if I'm querying this country here, and it brings up a box there, and it says it's the United States. So I can actually query each of these GIS labels. And these are done using, basically they are SQL statements, but with these extra spatial functions in. So you can actually say, instead of finding, click me around this point, find something that's around this point, or within a spatial relationship, so find something within this country or countries within this point. Yeah?
So the countries which are non-contiguous,
yes.
They're just one polygon.
In this data set, they're made up of more than one. So for example, I think UK's made of England, Scotland, Wales, and separate polygons. But when you're actually playing with this, it depends on where you get your data from as to how it's arranged. So,
but it can cope with having as part of the same polygon.
Yes, you can. You can have multi-polygons. Remember we mentioned, I wasn't sure if we'd get onto this, but you know the array types with multi-polygons. That's actually almost like an array of polygons. Yeah. So if you get return that, then you could have separate isolated polygon regions.
Like
yes.
Yeah,
you can specify this. Again, it depends on what you're trying to do with the data set and how you wish to query it. I think, if you want to come find me afterwards, I'll try and explain that a bit better. But yes, it depends on where you get the data set from and what you're planning to do with it. Yeah, as I zoom in and out, that's just doing SQL queries, just sort of zooming in and out. And doing. Yeah. Yeah, and it just specified any point in 2D space. So using a set of coordinates. Yep.
Silly question. So right now it's displaying everything.
Yeah.
Does that mean the client has all the data right now? Or is it rounding off or something?
I suspect with QGIS, it may have cached once it got across, but I'd say I don't actually work on the QGIS project.
In a sense, obviously, one of them is more like dots, but obviously they've got a bit more shapes than that.
Yeah.
Presumably, you can't see that shape right now. Does the client still download all that information?
Yes, because if you do a select, and you return the geometries within a certain space.
Okay, so you can't say select, but sort of round the edges off of it.
You can. There are various techniques you can use by having simplified versions of polygons in a joining table, which you can select instead if you lie outside of certain zoom ranges. And that's one of the techniques that you can actually use to try and speed up these types of queries. Like say, if you've got very big polygons, but they're one pixel, then why do we need to pull out all that information? But yeah, that's one of the techniques that we can use to do that. So that's my world of orders anyway. So I was quickly going to go through. How are we doing for time, Simon? Are we? If people could wait a couple more minutes for their coffee break. Okay. So I'm now going to go and add in another PostGIS layer. So I'm going to connect again to my database. Again, you'll see that there's my cities layer. I'm going to add that on top. So see, there's my layer of cities as well. So again, I can now start zooming in around here. And you'll see I've actually selected the cities layer here. So any queries I do using the query tool will actually now query that cities layer. So as I click on here, you'll see that's Paris. Where's that? Is that Cardiff, Swansea, is it? Yeah, that's Cardiff. No, not this data set. They probably couldn't afford it for this data set. I don't know why. I mean, this is actually compiled from public domain sources, so someone actually has actually gone through by hand and combined all this together to make it into a decent presentation. So that's
something. Kind of
sorry? Is it? Okay, well, nice to see you guys. No, I'm just kidding. Again, it all depends on the quality of data. You need to ask that of your data provider. Again, people have loaded big things like OS Master Map into this, which is another popular one that people like to use with topographical features. Right, so the other thing I wanted to do was, I mentioned before about spatial processing. Yeah, if you're for the time, then we can have a coffee break
and stuff.
Well,
I'm in sort of two minds, because I'm the next presenter, so...
Yeah. Okay. All right then. In that case, we'll say that that's I have got a couple more examples. So if you're interested in seeing some of the spatial and GIS processing functions, then if you come and find me outside, then if you can find some access, then I will actually I can demonstrate some of this perhaps offline to you. Yeah.
I had a quick silly question. All this seems to be in 2D, but you talked about GPS tracks.
Yes.
So I assume GPS data is 3D. Does this work in as many dimensions as you want it to?
You can store the coordinates, but it only does anything with the first two dimensions, and that's a restriction of the GEOS library.
So 2.5D, you can have different colours and different heights, but it's not like this bit of software isn't like Google Earth. You can't pan around in 3D. But if you time,
Yeah, it could store the coordinates, but it doesn't do anything with them. I mean, that's hopefully for people to work on in future. That answers your question. Okay, all right, well, thanks very much, guys. I hope that sort of gives you a rough idea of what we're doing with geometric objects. Again, I do have a couple more examples, so if you want to see some more and quite frightening and exciting stuff, then please do come find me outside, and I'll take you through some more things. But thank you very much indeed, and thank you, Simon.